Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung with another edition of Prophecy Today Intelligence Briefing. As the world is watching, there are thousands of Cuban freedom seekers demonstrating in this island communist country against the Marxist leadership of this small nation some 90 miles off the coast of America. Today on PTIB, I bring David James to my broadcast table, who recently was in Cuba, who will come to share with us his observations of a communist nation and the Christian community in Cuba. This is a very important report. Please make sure you hear it. David James will come to the broadcast table in a moment, right here on Prophecy Today Intelligence Briefing. If you want to keep up to date with what is happening in this world as it relates to current events, you need to bookmark my website. It's prophecytoday.com. If you'll go there, you can find on the home page the top 10 news stories happening around the world that may well be setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled. Go to my website, prophecytoday.com, and bookmark it, and then make sure you visit that site at least once a day. We now bring to this broadcast table David James. This week we're going to be talking about the ongoing crisis in Cuba. We haven't mentioned that on the broadcast yet, so I want you to stay tuned. But before that, again this week, David, we get from one of our listeners a prophecy question, and it's on the book of Revelation, this time concerning the identity of the beast in chapter 13. Talk to us about that.
Well, Jimmy, our listener wrote this. I was wondering about Revelation 13:3. I know many believe this is referring to Antichrist, but I'm thinking this is referring to the revived Roman Empire. Antichrist is a little horn, not a head. What do you think? So, Jimmy, let me read the first three verses of that chapter. Then I stood on the sand of the sea and saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So, Jimmy, the first thing I think we need to remember is that figurative language can use different images for the same thing. For example, in one place, Jesus is the good shepherd, but in another place, he is the gate to the sheepfold. So the beast in Daniel 7, I would say, is the Roman Empire, and then by extension, the revived Roman Empire. And the Antichrist is a little horn. And I think the beast from the sea in Revelation 13, though, is a person, just as the beast from the land is a person, the false prophet. Also, you can't really worship an empire, but the false prophet causes people to worship the first beast. And neither can an empire blaspheme, which is mentioned in verses 5 and 6. And then it seems to me that a singular person has authority over every tribe, tongue, and nation in verse 7. So, Jimmy, it's a good question, but I think I'm going to stick with this being a vision representing a specific complex person.
I do believe the exact same thing, David. And it's interesting to note the word Antichrist, not even used ever in the book of Revelation. Back in 1 John, in 2nd chapter and 4th chapter, we see that one of 27 names for the Antichrist. Well, with the world watching what's been happening in Cuba, I thought it might be good for us to discuss the situation there in Cuba. And especially in light of the fact that actually you had an opportunity to go there fairly recently. Talk to us about that trip.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. And a couple who has partnered with our ministry got connected with a Cuban pastor through Facebook. And after interacting with him, we felt comfortable enough to make arrangements to spend a couple of days with him. And it was a bit of a struggle due to the language barrier, but we were able to communicate well enough to get to know each other and to make some tentative plans for future ministry. And one thing I was amazed about was how much theological agreement there was between us. We're on the same page. I was hoping to go back last summer, but COVID hit, and so that never materialized, of course.
Well, praise the Lord for that pastor there in Cuba. I want you to talk more about the situation there. I do want to ask you, if you will, summarize for us what has been happening over the last number of days there in Cuba, because it seems like all of these protests and unrest sort of came out of nowhere.
USA Today ran an article that opened with this: thousands of Cuban protesters angered over food and medicine shortages, low COVID-19 vaccination rates, and electricity outages took to the streets Sunday and Monday for the first time in nearly 30 years. The protests are a rare defiance of the communist government's intolerance for dissent. And then on Wednesday, it said, the Cuban president for the first time acknowledged government shortcomings after previously blaming the unrest on social media and agitation from the U.S. Now, another news agency reported that there have been months of food and medicine shortages and even the collapse of hospitals due to the pandemic. The protesters were calling for political change after six decades of Communist Party rule, and they were shouting things like, "We want freedom, down with dictatorship, homeland and life, we want vaccines, and we are not afraid." And so in response, the police used tear gas against the crowds and have arrested dozens of people, with reports of some being tortured. And the Cuban authorities also blocked internet access to cut off the flow of information, especially from outside the country. Now, President Obama had taken steps to normalize relations, including restoring diplomatic ties and expanding travel and trade, which he did through an executive order. But because of Cuba's ongoing domestic and foreign policies, the Trump administration reversed many of these. And now President Biden had talked about reversing Trump's policies, but the current situation has put him in a real bind, and I just now read that he's considering even intervention.
That would be a very interesting development. David, you know, our audience has a fairly wide age range, and because of that, some of us old guys are probably well knowledgeable of the history of the last 50 or 60 years there in Cuba. But there may be some who could use a refresher course on the background of Cuba. Please give us that.
Well, Cuba is the largest island in the Caribbean. It's about the size of the state of Tennessee, interestingly. And it's located about 100 miles south of Florida. And it's actually an archipelago made up of about 1,600 islands with a population of over a million people. And until it was discovered by Christopher Columbus in 1492, it was populated by two separate indigenous people groups. Now, the first Spanish settlement was established in 1511, but within 100 years, almost the entire native population had been wiped out by a combination of disease and systematic genocide. And then the Spanish brought in more than a million Africans to work on their plantations until slavery was abolished in 1867. Now, Cuba remained a Spanish colony until the Spanish-American War of 1898, and then gained independence as a protectorate of the United States in 1902. Then, going to the 50s, Batista staged a coup in 1952 and established a corrupt and repressive dictatorship, and that was overthrown in 1958 under Fidel Castro with backing from the U.S. But when it became clear that the Castro regime would be communist and pro-Soviet, Eisenhower had the CIA train Cuban refugees to overthrow their government, which resulted in a failed invasion that's known as the Bay of Pigs, and that was under John F. Kennedy. Then in 1962, the Soviet Union planned to put nuclear missiles in Cuba, and that led to a standoff in the Atlantic that could have led to World War III if Kennedy hadn't held his ground and if Khrushchev hadn't blinked.
David, I understand that your visit to Cuba was not a very long visit, but take a moment, if you will, and tell us, what were some of your initial impressions of the country as a whole and the people that you had an opportunity to meet?
Well, Jimmy, Cuba was a lot like many of the third world developing countries I visited over the years, and many things that most of us take for granted and which are relatively inexpensive here as compared to wages, like electronics and cars, for example, they're generally very expensive, and so everything is repaired that can be repaired, usually many times. It's common to see horse-drawn carts in town, and most of those horses were small and nothing but skin and bones. We stayed in a small apartment attached to a house, and the owners had to register us with the local government, just like we did when staying at a hotel in Hungary in 1990, a few months after the Berlin Wall fell. We went to a small grocery store one morning, and there was a long line of people standing outside, not because the store wasn't open, but because they would only allow a couple of people in at a time. But the people we met were friendly and kind, which is something I found all over the world, and we tend to, I think, mistakenly judge what those in other countries must be like because of the actions of their governments. And the pastor had us for supper on Wednesday evening, and then he had me speak at the Bible study in his church that meets in their home, which is just a very tiny cinder block building with concrete floors. But as with everywhere I've been, born-again believers love the Lord and His Word, and there's a genuine warmth and connection that I would say transcends both language and cultural barriers.
Now, this all said, David, I want to find out, what can you tell our listeners about the present religious situation there in Cuba? Is there freedom of religion, and how are born-again believers affected by these government policies?
Well, when the Spanish arrived in Cuba, they forced conversions, and that continues to influence Cuban culture. So while 60 to 70% of the population is Catholic, only 4 to 5% regularly attend Mass. Now, Santeria conflates Catholic saints with the deities of African religions that came to Cuba through the slave trade, and it's estimated that between 80 and 90% of Cubans consult Santeria priests, and we see this kind of syncretism with Roman Catholicism all over the world. Protestant churches, on the other hand, make up only about 5% of the population, with Baptists and Pentecostals being the largest groups, but even most of the Baptists in the eastern half of the country are charismatic. Now, during most of Castro's rule, Cuba was a self-declared atheist state, and Christians were persecuted and marginalized. And even though Castro himself was educated by the Jesuits, he dismantled the Catholic school system in 1961 and nationalized the Catholic Church's property. But in the early 90s, Castro did lift some restrictions on religion, but the government is still far from friendly, and religious organizations have to deal with government interference all the time. And this is what this pastor told me, that sometimes he even has to deal with infiltration by government informants. So there are tremendous challenges, but maybe there is change on the horizon for the Cuban people with what we're seeing right now, and maybe that will make it easier to get into the country and to reach them with the gospel and give more freedom to the pastors and believers who are there.
David, I'm sure you would agree with me. When you look at the book of Acts, we see a record of persecution to the beginning of the church there in Jerusalem, and then it's spread around the world. But I would imagine persecution is going to help build the body of Christ there in Cuba. And I think that we should be praying for our brothers and sisters who do know Jesus Christ and want to reach out and bring other Cubans to Jesus Christ as well. Thank you for the research. Thank you for reporting on your visit to Cuba. I know that we've not wanted to talk about it before, but glad you got permission to be able to do that. And be sure to be ready for next week. We'll have another discussion we will have to have together.
I'll look forward to it, Jimmy. Thank you.
David James, with his observations that he made during his recent trip to the island of Cuba, 90 miles south of Florida. You know, Dave's report is based on that trip to Cuba and his meeting with the Christian leadership in this communist country. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 to 4 exhorts us to pray for those in higher authority, both in America and Cuba. We do that so that we can win people to Jesus Christ and prepare them for the end times. And that is my prophetic perspective on the news today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung. Thank you so very much for joining us on this edition of Prophecy Today Intelligence Briefing. Be sure to come back again next time when I will continue to look at current events in light of biblical prophecy.